Folks, if you're liking what you're getting from 30 MPC, the number one way you can support us is by subscribing to our newsletter. Every week, you only get two emails. On Monday, you get a content roll-up of everything that dropped last week. And on Fridays, I pick one topic and I personally write a deep dive on things like how to cold call, how to run a discovery call, or even how to hire an AE. So if you're liking what you're getting here, take 2 seconds, go to the show notes. You'll see a button to subscribe to our newsletter, or you can go to 30mpc.com/newsletter and do it there. We'll catch you soon. Cheers.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. I am your host, Nick Sigelski, and I'm joined with my co-host, Jen Allen Knuth. And today we have the first ever four-time guest, Charles Mulbauer, on the show. And this is a hot one because sometimes prospects ask us to chase our tails, run in circles, and do stupid stuff. And you can't always directly tell them, hey, that's a really dumb idea. But Charles is going to teach us how you can do that. Jen, why should people listen?
You don't become a four-time guest on 30 Minutes to President's Club by being average. Charles does a phenomenal job helping us use language that does not alienate our prospect, that does not frustrate our prospect, but helps us get to the best possible answer, not only for us, but for them as well.
And a 3, a 2, a 1, the best possible episode, and it's not a stupid idea to listen to this one.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do, do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes.
Your Zoom Info actionable insight tactic is called Jane's Moving Up. Why? Because that's the email subject line you'll use when you get a real-time notice that your prospect Jane just got promoted. From there, in the email, explain how Zoom Info helps rising sales leaders win their first 90 days on the job by highlighting coaching opportunities or supporting a team-wide prospecting push. And you can try out this trigger-based email template for prospect promotion and 4 other scenarios inspired by Zoom Info's go-to-market plays. Link in the show notes.
Otter AI's Autopilot for Sales gives you the freedom to sell on your discovery calls by taking notes for you. One of the best ways to deepen your discovery is to ask your prospect about the impetus behind their goals. So when a prospect tells me they want to advertise on more sales podcasts, I'll say, well, it's not every day that you wake up and decide you want to sponsor a podcast. What's causing you to even explore this in the first place? Now, we put together the ultimate discovery checklist with our friends at Otter AI, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes. Today's deal acceleration cheat code is brought to you by Pipedrive, which is a CRM built by sellers for sellers. The best way to drive your pipeline forward is to every single day pull up a list of all of your open opportunities and look at each opportunity by stage and think, what can I do today that will increase my likelihood of winning this deal? That's how you keep your ops moving forward in between meetings that you have on the calendar. Now, we documented 5 cheat codes that can help you cut your sales cycle in half with Pipedrive. There's a link in the show notes to steal them.
All right, Charles, welcome back to the show. You hopefully recall that we start every single episode with your top 3 actionable takeaways. So let's get your 3.
Thank you so much for having me. Actionable takeaway number 1 is a menu of trouble. The earlier we can bring up trouble in a sales cycle, the better. So that might sound something like this. Nick, before we hop on the next call, would it be okay if I maybe share some reasons typically why we find prospects or prospective clients don't typically work with us or don't typically move forward? Sure. And then you list out those things. Usually they could be timing could be an issue. This is not really a priority, even though you might like what we do. Or there could be a budget issue or something like that. Do you think any of those things might be an obstacle before we decide to move forward? Or what are your thoughts? So bringing that up early, I find always very helpful.
Beautiful. What's number 2?
So number 2 is actually sharing the resources that you have to leverage as a sales professional with your prospect and sharing with your prospect what you have to do internally in order to abide by what they want in a possible next step. So that might sound something like, let's say a prospect wants to do a trial by themselves. You can say, sure. Happy to run an evaluation with you, Just to provide some context, every evaluation that we have, we're always working. Me personally, I'm working on, I'd say, anywhere between 6 and 8 trials every single week. And so part of that is bringing in product specialists into an evaluation so that any one of our prospective clients can make a confident decision, yes or no. So I definitely want to do an evaluation with you, but want to make sure we're making the best use of our resources and your time. Do you think it's a terrible idea to include some other folks on your team in order to make a confident decision, yes or no? So that would be one way to share and leverage your resources as an excuse, because I find that prospects tend to have a very difficult time pushing back on things that make sense to them, logical sense, so that they could say, oh yeah, I get that. That makes sense. Sure.
All right, Charles, round us out. What's number three?
Number three is actually detecting their body language. And you might say, well, Charles, we're all on Zoom. That doesn't make any sense. First of all, a lot of people are currently in in-person meetings today, but be that as it may, even if you're not, even in this conversation, I'm not the best at it, but seeing the different cues from your prospect based on their own facial recognition and facial reactions, you can easily tell if they're really not into something. And you could just say something Jen is very familiar with. Jen, I could be way off, but it looks like you're not so crazy about what we're looking at right now. Something along those lines. So it's something to pay attention to and easy to do on Zoom.
So Charles, I'm particularly interested in today's interview. And the reason for it is when we were talking on the pre-show, you and Jen got into a riveting conversation around how we can stop being servants to our prospects and maybe be a little bit more servers of serving the deal, guiding them through a deal. And I'm feeling that right now because I sell all of our sponsorships for 30 Minutes to President's Club, and my calendar is indeed stacked, and we're a small team and we do have limited resources. And I've been really frustrated because I've been putting so much work on myself. If a client says jump, I'm jumping as high as I can. If a client says, I want you to go back with your team and create an extremely creative proposal, I'm pulling Armand into a coffee shop late at night and we're spending hours coming up with a creative proposal only to be told by the client, this wasn't exactly what we had in mind. And I feel like I might be running myself on the hamster wheel and screwing this up in the way that I am working with my prospects and how I'm communicating with them. And I'm hoping you can help me start at the top. What are some things I can do in the beginning of a sales cycle to make sure that I don't do what I'm doing to myself right now?
Awesome question. So I'm a big fan of Sandler. They have these 49 sales rules. One of their sales rules is don't chase tennis balls. And another way we all like to say it or to translate that is to get before we give. So if you ask me for something that is reasonable, I'll give like a two-step roadmap. Number one, give you a short acquiescence or say, yeah, that's something that we can do. And then the second thing I want to do is then create guardrails around that, because I can't just do it. It has to be done within certain boundaries. And so the purpose of that is to create equal footing between you and the prospect. And when you're communicating with your prospect, you are always communicating in a way where they're not above you and you're not above them. And so you can say it's more of like a psychological balance, but if we're talking about somewhere earlier in the cycle, the earlier we can do these things, the better. Let's say I'm making a recommendation around next steps. And I say, let's say you make a request, for example, Charles, what would be great is if you can send me a one pager. So I can say, yeah, I can definitely give you that information. So I'm acquiescing to your request. And then I'm going to put some guardrails around it and share a reason with you that would be tough for you to argue with. Okay. So my second piece of that roadmap might sound like, sure, I can send you something like that. Can I make a recommendation? Sure. I've been working at my company for about 2 years now. Every time that I've sent out a one pager, I found that things get lost in translation. Number two, people end up having questions that I can't answer. And number three, a lot of times they think we're something that we're not, and then we don't end up speaking until a year later. And a lot of times they wish they had a chance to work with us a year earlier. Those are the three things that typically happen. So unless this is a terrible idea, do you think it's the worst idea to maybe get other people on a call to literally see what this is so that we can avoid all those three things, even if you don't want to work with us or talk to us afterward? Something like that, right? These things can always be perfected, but that's like the mini roadmap. Again, like agreeing, not a problem. And then making a recommendation as opposed to fighting back or saying what I think we should do or saying, yeah, I could do that, but this works better. Like those three different ways don't work. What works always better, as I've mentioned, Nick, on other conversations we had, is acting always as the messenger and not the message. And the more you're acting as a messenger and being transparent about your experience and about what has failed in these situations, as long as that makes sense to the prospect, then they have a higher probability of turning that around and moving the way you want them to move.
Charles, how do I make reasons tough to disagree with?
So what we're really trying to do, and this might sound funny, is try to nicely tell to the prospect that that idea is stupid. That's what I'm doing. So what I would like to say is that's a stupid idea. Well, I can't say that, obviously. So what I would like to do is present them with reasons, logical reasons as to why that idea has not worked in the past. And people respond, it's like similar or along the lines of like loss aversion. Like people don't want to be pissed off. And I'm trying to give them an opportunity not to be pissed off. And I want to go to my experience. So, you know, I like using language like, so, you know, for context, what I found is, or like in my experience, what usually happens is, it's kind of like a form of like bringing up trouble, right? That's why I love bringing up trouble, because bringing up trouble could be anywhere, anywhere. So now I'm bringing up trouble now. So basically saying the trouble I've experienced when that happens is 1, 2, and 3. That's my concern. And then I'm going for a very hard no. Do you think it's like the worst? I like using the word unreasonable, actually. I find unreasonable works very well. Do you think it's completely unreasonable to bring other people on a call? And then I don't finish there. I still kind of lay it on thick at the end and say, this way, you only have to see this once and can make a confident no. Should that be the case? Those are reasons people have a tough time arguing with. So yeah, it may take some homework on your end to think about those reasons. But as long as I like enumerating also, it typically hasn't worked out for like one of two or one of three reasons. One, this, two, that. And then you go for the unreasonable requests, which also psychologically, as we all know, it helps. And that all really enhances the probability. Could a prospect say, no, Charles, your idea is stupid? Sure. But it really decreases that probability of that happening.
I want to recap what you just said. So prospect asks us to do something and you're like, that's a dumb idea. Instead of saying that, which would be rude and unprofessional and probably cause you to lose the sale, or fully acquiescing, which would be subservient and probably cause you to lose the deal because it's not a good idea and is going to hurt both the prospect and you in terms of navigating solving this problem together, the way you're responding is you're saying, hey, for context, what I found before is, and then you're inserting, oftentimes numerically, the reasons that that's a dumb idea and won't work. And then what you're doing is you're proposing a different way to help them get what it sounds like they're really asking for, or a different way of addressing the problem that they're trying to solve because you have experience doing this, asking them if the different route of action is unreasonable, and then finishing the statement with a, oh, and by the way, here's a benefit that you will get from taking this approach. Am I getting that right, Charles?
100%. And I want to point out one thing. The reasons that we're giving as to why this hasn't worked out in the past is also in their best interest. The entire talk track, if you will, is all about them. Things get lost in translation. You'll think something we're not. You'll think the pricing is set in stone. And so in order for you to even tell me to go fly a kite and to do so confidently, this is not a good use of your time. So it's reasons they can't argue with, especially because it's all about them. And none of what I said is perceived to be about me.
I remember when I was first becoming a little baby seller, I was so terrified of ever saying no, because I thought being agreeable was how you won people over. Now, let's say I put myself back in that shoes. I think a lot of sellers are in that mode, particularly right now where deals are few and far between. You mentioned the request for like a one pager. What are some of the other places or requests that a prospect might make that are super common where you would use that strategy? So if I'm trying this out for the first time, like, what are those moments? What are those questions that I might be asked where I can try using this?
I would say that if I were to give those questions a headline, it would be any request from the prospect where I, as the salesperson, now feel I am about to lose complete control of this sale.
Okay.
Whenever it fits within that headline, I am now going to do what we just talked about, as well as go for the no. When I feel like I'm always about to lose a sale, I'll also bring up Sandler again. Sandler has a saying that when you do not know what the next steps are, you've lost complete control. So anytime I feel like I won't know what the next steps are means I'm probably going to lose control. And if I feel I'm about to lose control, I'm going to bring up all the trouble and go immediately for the no, which would sound like, would it be the worst idea ever? Or would it be completely unreasonable? Or would you tell me to go to hell if I suggested, right? That might be a bit of an extreme example, but that is where I'm going to go and execute on those things. Really, because when you do that, one, it's different. Two, it's direct. And three, because of those two things, the prospect will bring down even more of their resistance or bring down even more of their skepticism and just give you an honest answer, which is really all I want. I just want an honest answer. Even if they say, honestly, I'm not going to do it that way, that's fine. I know where to spend my time and where not to, or how to approach reaching out to him or her next.
Let me give you one I heard last year that I thought was odd, which was, it was a first call, and at the end of the call, very senior executive says, oh, by the way, we're looking at two other competitors. And I said, do you mind me asking who they are? Probably shouldn't have asked it that way, but that's what I did. And then they said, no, we're not going to tell you. What would you do in that situation? Because it feels like a looking for trouble moment.
You mean, what would I do after they said, I'm not going to tell you?
Or how would you have asked the question differently, even if you would have said, like, your question was stupid, Jen, should I ask this instead?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. Well, if I'm a sales professional that I know has, where I've experienced that I've gotten battle scars, that hasn't worked, then I'm going to lay it on thick with a lot of humbling disclaimers / falling on the sword / going for the no. Because I find that when we ask questions in the most disarming way possible, we can ask anything we want, we can say anything we want. And even if the answer is no, we feel a lot better about it. I'll just totally make one up, just like spitballing here. Hey, Jen, I was wondering if I can ask you a question. And by the way, pardon me if this is like a very personal or uncomfortable question to ask. Actually, to be honest, I'm actually pretty uncomfortable asking. But do you think it's unreasonable for me to ask who the other folks are that you are evaluating? And I only ask that because if you are going to evaluate this, I would at least want to point out the differentiators, even if whether or not they're helpful. If they're helpful, great. And if not, no big deal. You wouldn't be the first person to tell me no. And I promise you, you won't be the last. So I thought it was worth asking. So I totally like spitballed that. Yeah, could it be perfected? But like, I'm giving you my insecurities. And then after I ask the question, I'm giving you like a heavy reason that's in your best interest as opposed to mine. And that's the best I can do.
Here's what you did that I did not do. You preempted the objection. You knew what the objection to answering that question might be. So instead of getting it and then reacting to it and then having to do this really awkward dance back and forth, you preempted it in the way that you asked the question. So I think that's a really powerful example of a place where what we say and do can often dictate what we have to work with. I love that example.
But I will say that preempting objections, Jen, is another form of bringing up trouble, which is what we talked about at the beginning of this conversation. This is all bringing up the trouble. Like, I don't care if you say no, I promise you. And like, prospects don't believe me. So because they don't care if you say no, I'm going to tell you why you might say no. And if you are going to say no, just tell me now. That's the umbrella that I'm operating under.
What do I do if I've said yes to something? I get off the call and I realize, I'm losing control. Maybe I get off the call, I listen to this episode, and I'm like, I know a deal in my pipeline right now where I said yes to something I'm supposed to do for a prospect, and I shouldn't have said yes to it. How do I walk it back?
The answer is to just walk it back. What does that mean? You give the guy a call or gal, you give him a call, or you send them an email and say, I screwed up. I made a mistake. I'll give you a story, actually. I was coaching an AE who was telling me that their prospect was in the middle of a trial. And he told me that he feels for one reason, or he felt for one reason or another, that he mismanaged their expectations. I forgot the reason why. And he felt that the probability of them actually liking the trial was not going to be good or was going to be low, and he didn't know what to do about it. Do you know what I told him? I said, why don't we call the prospect and apologize? He's like, what do you mean? Just say I'm sorry? Yeah. What do you have to lose? You just told me you think you're going to lose the deal, right? So just lose it going out swinging, or whatever the statement is. So if you're going to go out swinging. So he said, okay. So he picked up the phone, called up the decision maker. Let's say his name's Mike. Hey, Mike, what's going on? And Mike said, hey, Sarah, I know I'm catching you off guard here. I'm actually just calling to apologize. And she said, what do you mean? What are you apologizing for? He said, I felt like I gave you the wrong impression about what to expect from the trial. And I noticed you guys aren't using it that much. And I feel like it's my fault. And so I'm not sure if there's anything to do about it, but I felt bad about it. I wanted to call it. That's all he did. It was weird. It's a weird thing to do. What happened? She said, I'm glad you called. Actually, the trial is going really, really great. And I'd like to talk to you more about how you guys might be helpful. Now, yeah, Charles, that's nice. You told me a success story. It doesn't matter if it's a success story. Let's say it wasn't a success story. Okay. And he said, I'm sorry. And she's like, yeah, no, I appreciate it. There's nothing we could do about it now. Good. Like, get it out of your head and let it go. And now you know about it sooner rather than later. And now you could have even asked the prospect, what could I have done better? You can't lose. If you're going to lose, I think I wrote a post about it recently. Somebody told me when I started selling, if you're going to lose, just lose without an agenda and you'll only benefit from it. So I was losing a lot at the time, which is why I got that advice. Because he's like, instead of losing with an agenda, just lose without one. And you don't know what can happen from it. It can only benefit you. If you can turn it around, number one. And if you can't, you'll know better sooner rather than later. And you move up and you move forward quicker.
One of the things, so you're reminding me, because I'm thinking about moments where I've done it. There's a lot of moments where I have it. But there was one deal I remember that had so many stakeholders. And the champion wanted me to do one-on-one calls with every single stakeholder. And in an effort to be likable, I said yes. And then as soon as I hung up the phone, to Nick's point, I was like, what did I just do? This is going to take me 20 weeks to get all of these done. And you're absolutely right. I emailed because I'm a wuss, and I sent a note and just said, hey, after I hung up, I realized that in order for me to do what you've asked, we're not going to be able to even be remotely at a point of consideration until like March of next year. And so in retrospect, I think maybe this is a different way we could go after it instead. And I think one, to your point, when you just own it and you say, I screwed up, it's a connecting moment. I think people really do appreciate it, because sales is largely about like, I have it all together and I know everything what I'm doing. And we don't, we really don't. And so one, I think it gave me a closer relationship with the prospect, but two, he was super receptive to it. I think sometimes we have this idea in our heads, like if we admit fault or that we screwed up, the prospect is gonna be like, well, I'm just not buying from you. So I think that's another example of just a place where it's so easy once you do it once to realize like it's just not as scary as I think we often make it.
I'm so glad Jen said that, because it's counterintuitive. right? You think we have it all together? No, we don't. That's such BS. We absolutely don't. And once you realize that you don't, you can enjoy yourself. It's a really liberating, once you realize you don't have to be this quote unquote persona or what's expected of you as a salesperson, and you can really let go of those insecurities and share them with your prospect, makes the job way more fun. It's an amazing feeling once you see how they respond to you when you do these things. It makes you feel much better and helps increase the probability of either moving forward or getting an honest answer around a no early. So I love that you just said that. It's so true.
Well, it's been a phenomenal episode, Charles, and we're running out of time, so I got to move to the final question. And the final question is this. I hope you remember it. It's your fourth time on the show. The last question is, we've talked about a lot of really great things salespeople should be doing. Now I'm going to ask you about a shouldn't. And so my last question is, what is one bad habit that you see a lot of salespeople exhibiting that you think they need to break because it hurts them more than it helps?
I'm sure you've heard this before. I'll just say it because it's what I've been dealing with fairly recently at my firm, is haste makes waste. So that's all I'll say. Whatever that means for you as a sales professional, you can interpret that. I'll leave it somewhat mysterious, but that's the big mistake.
Well, don't hastily leave this episode, folks. Stick around for a 60-second recap coming up soon.
Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes. Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Super Cadence by Influ2, which helps cut through the noise of oversaturated prospecting channels. If you want to get your prospects' attention, you got to do stuff a robot would never do. One of my favorite plays is getting warm introductions to the accounts that I'm targeting via salespeople who work at that account. Salespeople help salespeople. Another approach could be using Super Cadence to run SDR ads to put a face to the name. Now, we worked with Influ2 to put together a special toolkit on ways to humanize your outreach, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes.
Here's my secret to being a sales superhuman. It's auto reminders for everything. If I expect any reply from a prospect, I press Command H, and Superhuman pops it right back into my inbox if I don't get a reply in 2 days. That means if you handle an objection, if you suggest times for a meeting, or if you ask for cuts back on red lines, always create a 2-day reminder task and assume they will not reply. So if you want to follow up on time every time, you can get a free month of Superhuman by checking it out in the show notes.
This actionable competitive tactic from Clue is the trap question. Steer discovery toward the winning zone. If we're competing with a podcast that has no newsletter or webinar series, we might ask a trap question like, how do you figure out if those podcast listeners are making their way to your mailing list? And when you're in a head-to-head, there's no better way to prepare for your next competitive battle than with our trap questions and battle card templates from our friends at Clue. The link's in the show notes.
Your top four actionable takeaways from this episode with Charles Muhlbauer. Number one, if you say yes to doing something for a prospect and then get off the call and realize, I probably shouldn't have said yes to that, don't just sit there and feel terrible inside. Pick up the phone and call them and apologize. Number two, if you are giving reasons to a prospect for why something they asked for is sort of a dumb idea, make those reasons about them and in their best interest, not about you.
Number three, as Charles said, don't chase tennis balls. So create equal footing by getting something before we just jump to giving. So if the prospect asks for something reasonable, say something like, yes, that's something we can do, but create guardrails. By saying something like, mind if I make a recommendation? When I'm asked to do that, I find X. That'll help you make sure you're not overgiving without getting something in return. And number four, be a guide, not a servant. Buyers are not looking for us to say yes to everything. Evaluate every ask through the lens of, is this actually the best way for the buyer to get what they're looking for here? Nick, how can listeners help us out today?
Well, if you didn't pick up on it, Charles has been a four-time guest now. And if you've not gone all the way back and listened to some of our early episodes of 30 Minutes to President's Club, Charles first appeared on the show on episode number 25. Holy cow, I was a little boy back then. And he had this amazing interview where he taught us about this concept called the humbling disclaimer, which I kid you not, Armand and I own some rental property together. We used this technique that Charles taught us to legitimately negotiate like $175,000 discounts on this apartment building that we were buying from the one episode. And so this is one that is worth listening to. Go back. It's episode number 25. Thanks for listening, folks. And we'll see you on the next one.
Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes. Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Super Cadence by Influ2, which helps cut through the noise of oversaturated prospecting channels. If you want to get your prospects' attention, you got to do stuff a robot would never do. One of my favorite plays is getting warm introductions to the accounts that I'm targeting via salespeople who work at that account. Salespeople help salespeople. Another approach could be using Super Cadence to run SDR ads to put a face to the name. Now, we worked with Influ2 to put together a special toolkit on ways to humanize your outreach, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes.